You're now diving into the fish tank.
Sitting down with Seth Living, Seth, OJ, Juice Man, ooh, and this is strictly for them true fans, yeah. Dolph fans, number one, of course y'all, this ain't no ordinary sports talk, dive up in that fish tank.
Welcome back to the Fish Tank, presented by iHeartRadio, right here on the Miami Dolphins Podcast Network. Seth Levitt, and the only podcaster to be honorary captain for a 70-point performance in the National Football League, OJ McDuffie. Juice, are you fired up for this one?
Man, you know I am, Big Seth. I'm always fired up to get back in the studio with you, man. But this guest right here, man, is one of my favorites of all time, man. So it's going to be a lot of fun.
Well, normally you only like guys on the offensive side of the
this
ball.
This is very true.
But Trent Gamble, first of all, welcome to the Fish Tank. Diving
thanks,
in.
Thanks, OJ. Nice to be here.
Great to have you here. But not only did you play defense, but he played special teams, damn right. And there's a special place in your heart for that.
Always, man. Teamers, man, you know, that's how I broke in the NFL. No matter what you say about my draft status, Big Seth's all, here's Trent. This guy here is always trying to give me crap about my draft status, man. But today, Seth, I'm going to get ahead of the game, man. It's not about me. It's about Trent.
Right.
It's an incredible story.
Who has no draft status.
Right.
My whole point. He's sitting here trying to act like, oh, I was a special teams guy. Come on, man.
So let's talk about your non-draft status, Trent. No, let's think about this. You're 5'8", 185 pound.
He
safety
just,
corner.
Hold on,
yeah.
Hold on.
No, we just talked about it. I'll get it.
That's fine. I'll take it.
I get it. 5'9". 5'9". I'm 5'9". I went at 5'10 in the program, but actually 5'9". You go undrafted out of Wyoming, but you come here with the Miami Dolphins, and you run 4.3, and you light up every single drill. I mean, that right there alone, I thought my best time was 4.42, 4.43 maybe. That was at home with the wind behind me and
right,
everything.
Right, right. And who was
yeah,
running the clock?
Exactly right.
Kajana?
Yeah, right. Tell us how it all went down, man, because a lot of guys we've had on the tank, it seems like, and that kind of have your status, all roads led through Mike Westhoff. How'd it go down for you?
Yeah, so not being drafted, you have an opportunity to sign with multiple teams, right? So I had a few teams that were interested. But the Dolphins ended up being the best pick, even though at that time we had like one of the top DB crews in the whole league. So, and we had drafted three DBs. So it was like, well, maybe that wasn't the best situation, but it was like special teams is like so important to them, and that's how you're going to cut your path. So this is the best place to go. And that's how it went down, right? Over the summer and all the drills, like everyone's saying, like, slow down. And Westhoff, you know, when we have those OTAs, he has all his special teams drills, and he's really watching, does anyone really care, you know, and are they going to take it serious? And so that was my only way, and I started going as 100 miles an hour, and he saw that and was like, you're taking this serious, and I'm gonna give you an opportunity.
Yeah, it's so funny you say that about people telling you to slow down. That's the last thing you tell a young person, because that's how you get cut.
Well, who was saying it?
Like, but veterans usually the older guys want, you know, it's not making me look bad. You know?
I can't name names.
Yeah, that's
right.
The last thing you want is to slow down. And, you know, and one thing about Mike Westhoff and his team is that the Dolphins were one of the only teams that took special teams as serious as offense and defense. Mm-hmm. And so that's why, you know, I know for a fact that he went to bat for me on draft day. Because I was a return guy, but he wanted to, you know, I could be a receiver later, even though we had receivers here. But yeah, that's good stuff with Mike. Mike was always serious about special teams.
Yeah. So, like I said, I came here as a free agent, but it wasn't until like the summer where going through all those drills as he's watching, is like, you know, I'm going to put you in the positions to try and make it. So, in that first preseason game, I was already a starting flyer because of what I'd done over the summer. And it was just the opportunity to go get it done. But, you know, most of the guys that have come, you know, our first year in the league as a rookie, most of those guys haven't played special teams since they were freshmen.
Right.
And it's like, you know, I'm a star in college. So I'm going to come here and special teams is like, you know, for me, you know, I didn't even start till I was a senior. So I had a different route. So I was playing special teams all the way up. So I knew that was my open door.
Seth, he's a flyer.
No. Yeah.
These flyers, you know, you see them. They get abused out there, man.
Well, or they do the abusing.
Or they run by people with that 4.3 speed, for sure.
Right, absolutely. No, I just remember, so, okay, you survived that first mini camp. Training camp starts. And how many DBs were it? You said we drafted three. So it was Ben Kelly, Arturo Freeman, and there was another guy.
Jeff Harris. Yeah.
We drafted those three guys. But as you said, Pat, Sam, Brock Marion, you know, B.
Jerry
Walt
Wilson
was here. Jerry Wilson. Yeah. All those guys.
Greg Jeffries, yeah.
Yeah, all that whole crew. And so how many DBs are ahead of you when you start camp?
So there were 19 at the start of camp.
Okay.
And I was number 19.
Out of 19 defensive backs.
And, you know, it can get discouraging. It's like you'll do special teams, but really offense and defense is, like, if you can't step in at least as a backup, and, you know, it doesn't matter how good you are. You know, you have to be able to do both. And those days where you're not getting the reps and it's like, man, I'm 19, they keep 8. Like there's just no shot. But I learned every position. So I knew corner, nick and dime, both safeties. So I could plug in. I didn't make mental mistakes. And ended up, you know, some guys cut themselves out and worked my way up. And by the first game, I was on the active roster, special teams, and then playing some nick and dime.
I talk about a guy, Scott Miller, all the time on our podcast. And that's the thing he told me as a wide receiver, a young wide receiver with greats on our team, Urban Fryer, Mark Ingram. I mean, Duper was on the team at that time at the beginning. Learn every position. Because if you learn every position, you'll dress out every single game. You know, everybody was worried about being a nickel or a dime or outside corner. Just you learn every position and you got an opportunity every single week. And you will. I mean, the 47 is a 47-man roster. So the guy that can do everything is going to dress out every game. And that's a great way of doing it, man.
And now you say 19th, but what I was getting at was people were telling you to slow down. Like, your name started to pop up. They were talking about you because of the way you were performing in these drills. Because little white guy shows up from Wyoming in that defensive back room, and if you impress those guys, you start to hear Trent's name, and oh, Trent this, Trent that, and everything. So you started to get attention, but you also started getting attention from some of the veterans. And in any training camp, there's always one vet that's making life miserable for the young guys. Who was that for you?
Lamar Thomas.
Why is your guy? Of course, it was LT. But he's not even in the DB room. Why is he giving you a hard time?
It's just like one of his favorite things to do outside of talk.
Right.
Well, talking is his favorite thing.
That is his favorite thing.
That just happens to be one of the branches. But, you know, but I'm having to cover him in different 7-on-7 and team and things like that. And, you know, he's what, 6'3"? So he's looking down like, this is a joke, right? But he's not doing it like in a nasty way. He's like, you know, but we're going to see what you're made of, because what I see right now is I can rattle this one and I can see if I can run you out of here, you know, but practice after practice, he'd keep talking and I wouldn't say a word. And, you know, I think I pushed him down and knocked a ball out once. And he was like, I'm coming for you now, but because it never happened, that once you get on then the other side where he respects you, then he's like, you're a great mouthpiece for you. So anyway,
right. Mouthpieces, that's I think, that's the right term with LT. You know, it's interesting, too, because he fought against his size in a different way. He was just rail thin. LT used to put, like, change in his pockets on weigh-ins. He's the only guy I knew that wanted to weigh more. And he, you know, so he constantly fought against that. So I'm sure he was looking for the guys that he still had that UM thing going. He was looking for the guys that he could try to pick on. I love that you gave it back to him.
It was a perfect segue into the preseason. It was beautiful.
Right. Got to give it back to him. So Travis Wingfield, Seth and I, you know, you met Travis. We do the post-game show. And we always have this debate, the debate about preseason games.
Oh, man, Travis loves preseason.
Seth hates it, as you can tell. Travis thinks it's like the Super Bowl. I'm kind of in between, because I know how important it is for guys, you know, to go out there and, you know, and show off and, you know, in the preseason game when they're fighting for a position on the squad. Was there any specific moment during the preseason that, you know, that was a real difference maker for you?
It was the first play of preseason, actually. So we were playing Pittsburgh, the first preseason game. And actually, the first was a kickoff, but it went out of the end zone. So my next play was on punt team at a Flyer. So that's my first real play. And there's two guys out there, right?
Yeah.
It's like, you know, you either get it done or you don't. And these guys, they're like Lamar's height, Lamar's mouth. And they're like, white boy, what are you doing? Like, you don't belong here. What, you know, you belong somewhere else. Like, we're going to take you to the bench. Like, there's no way you're making this team. And so in that, like, 5 or 7 seconds while you're lining up before it snapped, like, time kind of slowed down. And they kind of pulled the Lamar, who was already doing that. But there's two of them. And it was kind of that, like, you have a decision to make. Do you belong or don't you? And there's no, like, talking. You either get around these guys or it's going to be, you know, the beginning of the end. And something clicked, and I ran through one of them, ran around the other one, got created a fair catch. And that started, like, the next 6 months of, like, a zone where you feel like you're unstoppable. It doesn't matter who's out there. And so that was that first play where it was like, okay, I belong. It doesn't matter who it is. And the confidence that's built from there.
Yeah, man. That is what's up, man. The confidence right there. Then there's nobody can stop you at that point. I mean, how many one-on-one opportunities you get out there as a Flyer? Not very many, I'm sure.
None. Yeah. You know, once you start doing well, like, you know, it's two at the minimum. That's it.
At the minimum. Right. I love that. Talk about it. So he just said creating a fair catch. You were a punt returner for a part of your career. What does that mean for you? What do you see where the Flyer creates the fair catch?
You don't want to get knocked out by Trent Gamble is what you don't want. He's got a 4.3 speed coming at you like a bullet. Yeah. So you really, honestly, me as a punt returner, I used to look up and, you know, see where the punt. Then I look down and see where the Flyers were. I look once. And if I see a Flyer that's already beat my guys, then it's an automatic fair catch depending on hang time and distance and things like that. So, yeah, I probably would have called a lot of fair catches with Trent.
I love it. Yeah, sure. I love it. So, and I'm going off script a little bit here, but as you're telling me this, so we always do a little prep and we reach out to guys, hey, Trent's coming on. And so I reached out to Sean Wooden and I was like, what do you got on Trent? He said, not a whole lot. He was really about business, whatever. He said, but he had a chip on his shoulder. And I never noticed it because to me, you know, you always smiled, whatever, everything was good. Your mom would always call me. She'd come into town twice a year. We'd go look at pictures for an hour. This before you could, like, email people photos.
Right.
And she'd want to get the best pictures of her boy. And, you know, they're busy taking pictures of juice.
Oh, here we go. I didn't find a way to get that in there.
So we would have to go find that 42, and, you know, we'd find
the
bottle there.
Needle in a haystack, but it's good. It's
so I got to know mom really well. I was like, chip on his shoulder. But now as you're sitting here telling me these stories and these guys are out there and they're giving it to you out there like that and you're going to show them, I love it. But I guess you have to. This is a game that you kind of have to have that chip. You've been known to have a chip on your shoulder.
Always. Still do. Still have one.
I love it.
Well, you know, as a free agent, you know.
Right.
And that's a little different these days. Like you're basically a long shot. So if you're drafted in the second, third, or fourth, you can do okay in camp, but it buys
yourself.
What
about the first? What if you're a first round draft pick?
Yeah, well, you bought yourself 4 or 5 years, okay. Right? But, you know, based on the investment.
I bought nine. So I bought nine. Faked it for 9 years. So
I think you bought nine after the draft position. I'll give you some credit for that. Sorry, didn't mean to come
to low. Yeah, and then you got everybody saying, I mean, when I first walked into the complex, the very first words were said to me were, are you the new punter?
Oh, I love it.
So
who said it?
It was one of the equipment guys.
Wow. How did it be Tony? That's Tony, I guess.
That wasn't Tony. And it definitely wasn't Joe. It was someone else.
Oh, okay. All right. Uh-oh.
Not Charlie.
I'm not going to ask Charlie. Him. Yeah. I'm not going to check Charlie.
I think underestimation was my weapon. If I can wield this and use it for my benefit, then I will. So
it's got an episode title right there.
We sure did.
Underestimation was my weapon. Yep. I love it. Well, you obviously proved yourself, overcame the odds, made the active roster, as you said. I want to get back to these, what was 18 DBs and now is 8 or 9. The guys that were in that room, great ball players, probably could compete with the defensive line for having the most outrageous personalities in that room as well.
Yeah.
You're a pretty conservative, quiet guy. What is it like going to work every day, sitting in that room? Who was the DB coach at that time? Was it still Mel?
Yeah, Mel.
So Mel Phillips is leading the room. And 2-9 is there, now coach Sam Madison, Pat Surtain, Brock. What was it like being in the room with those guys outside of the room? Were you getting the invites to DB night out? Like, tell us what it was like to be a DB with that crew.
You better be on point, you know, because Brock's going to pull some prank. You steal your helmet, you know, do something like that. You know, there's always going to be a wrestling match with Sam. And he's got the man strength and the long arms. So, like, I can wrestle all right. But when you tank, it's like he was not that fast, but you know why no one could ever get off the line.
Right.
Because when he gets his hands on you, like it's done. And so the wrestling matches, the constant giving you crap, making you sing, making you buy breakfast, carrying the luggage, Popeye's chicken on the plane.
That's right. Every position group had their own meal, pre-game or pre-flight meal, right? So you had to do the Popeye's. That's great. Well, what about, did you get the DB night out invite?
A couple times, but you know, my margin for error was like So going out, eating unhealthy, like I was just so locked in, you know. So one time they did come out, but I don't know if it was this DB night, because I know Izzo was there.
Okay.
So
like,
maybe he was included in it, you know. Well, there was the Burton Jacks night where at that point in the season, it was just Arturo Freeman and I left as rookies, and all the DBs went, and of course, we have to pay.
Yeah.
Right? So everyone orders, you know, steak and lobster and everything else as part of the rookie deal.
That's what Sam would tell me, the one DB night I got invited to.
That's dirty. That is dirty.
Oh, but you said, so someone bailed you out though, right?
Brock and Sam.
He brought that Dallas money over.
Miami money. Yeah, they had to pay him to come over here. I think he almost went to Baltimore, and then he came over here too. So, yeah, that was just an unbelievable crew, and it was kind of like, where does Trent fit in? Off the field. On the field, we understood.
So the personalities are one thing, but the ability to transition to be a serious and professional, I think three of them made, you know, Sam, Pat, and Brock all made Pro Bowl, and Brian within a couple years. So you're on the field with, and then you got Zach and JT in front of you. Like, this is like, there's no messing around. Right. So like there's a mess around the locker room and sometimes the meeting rooms and whatever, but you're on the field. Like you better get it done. So
yeah,
it's pretty cool.
Yeah, those guys aren't having it. Now these wrestling matches, okay. I think you told me they sometimes happen the night before games.
Yeah.
What was going on?
Well,
like, you know, is that your
ready to go, man? They're ready to go,
defensive
man.
Players
defensive
are
ready to go, man. They can't wait to hit somebody.
Well, look at me. So I look like someone you want to just like pick on.
Try. They want to try you, huh?
Right. So the roommates are like, you know, testing, and it's like, all right, well, let's go. You know.
Wait. But so you guys are in the hotel. It's a road game. We're in, you know, wherever, Dedham, Massachusetts, or somewhere. Yeah. Who's your roomie? Who did you room with today?
Well, Ben. Okay. What I just lost his last name.
Ben Kelly. Yeah.
Jeff Ogden.
Oh.
A couple. So those were a couple of the earlier ones. Yeah. But, you know, we've got like rug burns and bleeding. And it's like, you know, but once you win, like, that's not enough.
Right.
Like, it's like,
no,
I'm not going to let you win. Yeah, and you can't accept losing. So it lasted a little while.
Oh, hilarious. Hilarious.
So it's like, all right, we've got a game tomorrow.
So they show up. We think they're all roughed up because they're just getting after it at the game. And, like, all that happened the night before, right after snack.
Man, right after snack. Yeah. All that food.
Fighting over those chocolate chip cookies.
Well, Troy Drake was my roommate. So
you were
not
wrestling. I would take Ben Kelly as my one-on-one instead of Troy Drayton, for sure.
You know, you mentioned briefly Larry Izzo. I know he was the special teams captain your rookie year. What was it like playing with Izzo? I mean, and did you ever hang out with him off the field? Because Izzo was one hell of a character. You talk about characters. Ooh. This character right here had to be very interesting as well, especially your rookie year.
Yeah, talk about underestimation, right? So he used that to his benefit. But as slick and clever and intelligent and wily, you know, as he was, you know, a great leader and then intense and just, you know, always just made plays. So following someone like that on the field was pretty special, right? You know, with the guys on offense and defense and special teams, we were pretty loaded. So to have him as a guy that's going to probably should be in the Hall of Fame for special teams at some point.
Unbelievable. You know, he has the most special teams tackles in the history of the NFL. It's pretty impressive. I reached out to Iz and because I was hoping to get something, but he, you know, he's in coach mode now.
Yeah.
And so he's like, you know, and the other thing with Izzo, he doesn't text back. He's like, do you have these friends that leave you these six-minute voice-to-text messages? And so he's like, hey, meetings here or whatever. Yeah, Trent Gamble, smart, tough player. He did everything. And he was like giving me what he would give me if this was a press conference, and he was trying not to, you know, let anybody know they're making the team. But he had a lot of nice things to say.
Well, that's kind of what I did, though. I mean, I was a free agent. Just keep your mouth shut and go to work. You haven't earned anything. And every day is the same. I remember Trace Armstrong never said a word to me all camp until the very end. And he's like, I've watched you the whole camp and you've just not said a word. You've gone to work and really respect you. And so for a guy like that,
that's a big deal.
Yeah, that's big.
A high praise.
To try and make
guy.
It, you just got to do everything right.
I forgot that you played with Trace for it would have been 1 year, right? Was that?
Yeah. So think 2000 was the end for a lot of guys that had been there, or you know, that was the year Thurman Thomas came down for his final year. So pretty pretty crazy.
Thurman, man, it was hard to accept Thurman, you know, being a
Buffalo Bill.
But our moms were really cool, so I had to accept
it. That made it.
Yeah, I had to accept.
That is
you,
too
man.
Funny. Yeah. That is pretty funny. But it's just hearing you say that about Izzo. your paths were similar. He was from Rice, undersized guy, but I don't know that he was quiet in the corner. Like, I don't.
No.
Your personalities might have been a little bit different.
No, he was like a Lamar Thomas in a different way. Yeah. You know, always talking, always chatting. But I did go. Well, maybe I can say this, but you'll
never say it.
Yeah,
it's not live.
Well, maybe it'd been a DB night, but like I said, Izzo was there and some of the other guys. We were at some club down in downtown Fort Lauderdale, and this woman comes up and starts talking to me, and I'm just sitting there. And Izzo, after about 5 minutes, walks up and goes, "That's a dude. Get out of here." You know,
yeah,
so
right.
So he that's possible. It didn't even look like it.
Right.
But one, he could have told me, but he just let me sit there. You know, he and Zach and everybody else and Sam and Pat are, you know, yeah, watching this unfold. Oh, he could have saved me, but, you know, Izzo finally did. I never heard the end of that.
I bet you Izzo was sitting there. No, let it marinate.
Right, right. Yeah.
Oh, I'm sure he was.
They will let it in on that.
That's too funny.
You know, we're talking about some fun stuff, man. It's it is fun to reminisce about a lot of that stuff, man. But Trent, a lot of people talk about, and you said it yourself, that Trent was always about his business, always handled business. In fact, late in the season, you handled your business so well against Tampa that you caught the attention of someone else on the sideline. Tell us about that in the Tampa game.
So we'd played Tampa, and I was noticing on whether it was kickoff, we were running down on kickoff or running down on punt, like, it just wasn't two guys. There were like three always coming at me the whole game. I was like, I don't care, send five. I'm still going to get where I need. And I think I ended up having four or five tackles. And at the end of the game, before he shook the hands of Coach Wanstead, Tony Dungy ran up to me and was like,
"That is awesome.
Like, we schemed three guys on you like the whole game, and we couldn't stop you." And it's like, "You're a hell of a player. What a great game." So
That is
I'll
awesome.
never forget that.
We
right?
can hear about it. A lot of high praise from some really big guys, man. That's good
He's
stuff,
in the Hall
man.
Of Fame.
Yeah.
And not only is he in the Hall of Fame, I think, I don't know if he has a vote, but he's in the Hall. That's a Hall of Fame head coach.
Iconic for a lot of reasons,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. And the fact that he did it before, right, because normally the coaches beeline for each
right.
other.
Yeah.
The security director's pointing out yeah. where the coach is, you know, and they go right. So he goes up to the special teams guy. And they obviously were talking about you leading up to it, and they didn't deliver on whatever he was asking.
I don't blame going to him first, though. I would have gone to him. I would have gone to Trent first,
too.
What
are you saying there?
I don't know. I wouldn't have gone to the head coach first, either.
Okay.
That's all I'm saying.
Especially after a loss, right?
Yeah, well, that's true.
Period.
That's a good point.
It was one of those years. Just everything was like a zone.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, that's really cool. So, well, speaking of handling business, I'm going to fast forward a couple seasons to the 2002 season. 2002, if you remember, the biggest news of 2002 was we trade for Ricky Williams. So everybody's fired up, heading to the home opener. We've got Detroit here. It's not a divisional, it's not even conference rivalry, but it doesn't matter. It's run, Ricky, run. We can't wait to see Ricky. We love when the season opener is also a home opener. And Ricky scores a first quarter touchdown. So he's giving the people what they want. And then the game kind of slows down a little bit. And right at the end of the first quarter, I don't know if you remember where I'm going with this. I'm sure you do. The game starts to stall out. And so we flip the field second quarter. We punt. Mark Royals gets back there. He punts the ball, seemingly a routine play. And then something happens. It's probably got to be one of the more memorable moments of your career.
It is. So let's go. It was on the sideline. And remember Scott McGarahan?
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
I think he may have been out that game. He was hurt or something like that. But right before he comes up and is like, "Go make a play, man. It's time." So we punted it, and the punt returner is tracking the ball. But as a flyer, you've got to get your release. But to do it well, you've got to track the ball also, because the returner may mislead you, take you somewhere else. And the goal is to try and, you know, either fair catch or catch it so it doesn't go in the end zone
for
a touchdown.
You're tracking the ball. You're trying to beat two guys.
Yep. So I have the vice guy on one hand, but I see the ball. He doesn't recognize it, and the returner's coming over. So I just take the returner, and I throw him into the ball, right? It hits off of him and rolls towards the end zone, and I pick it up and score. So,
yeah,
you know, it was one of those, like, perfect plays that unfolded. And, you know, as a punt returner,
yeah,
you know, you have to possess the ball. So it had hit perfectly where it rolled in the end zone because you couldn't advance it. So all I had to do was pick it up in the end zone and ran. And the first person that came was JT because JT was still at punt team at the time, you know.
I'm sure he was.
And that was iconic. So still have that ball at home.
Do you really?
In my son's room,
I love it. And I think mom's got a picture or two from that as well. Yeah, I remember going through those. I mean, but that's – how many touchdowns had you scored? Did you score at all in college?
Not in college, but I played offense in high school. So, you know.
But 5 years in college. This is 02, so this is your third year in the NFL now.
Score a touchdown in the NFL on special teams in that way is pretty special. So.
Pretty special.
That is pretty special.
I know, as a returner, I like what he's saying. He's spotting the ball, because for me as a returner, I'm spotting that flyer, and if he's looking at the ball, I'm trying to get him.
Could you still do that back then?
You can't do it now.
You can do it sort of. You just can't headhunt.
Right. Exactly.
It's like, I'm going to get this flyer back. I'm not going to fair catch. I'm just going to take his.
But when did that change? Because that was like you were known for that. I don't mean to glamorize it, but you knocked a couple dudes out.
I tried to get some get back every once in a while.
When do they start changing the helmet to helmet and some of those blindside blocks?
There, I don't know, man.
Maybe 2005, 6, 7, after I was done.
So you had to be aware of that, of the guy that was looking, that wasn't just a quick returner, but a guy that might have had a little chip on his own shoulder.
A little bit.
Yeah.
A little bit. They'd already got me in the game. I got to get them back.
I get it.
So the next year, 2003, was your fourth and final year, but it was not without challenges, my man. Talk about what you dealt with that season.
So I had just signed a new four-year contract, but at the beginning of that training camp, it was clear that the final safety spot was going to come down to Scott McGarahan or I, and we become really close. And I'll just go back when I was like 12, right? So I think I was in fifth grade. And they had this like school race, and we were all practicing in PE like every day. And my friend and I were the fastest two kids, and all the practice runs we'd finish like the same. So we'd made a pact like when we come around the corner, we'll just finish together, right? But winning in competition was like kind of like an identity,
right,
in a bad way, you know, like I'll feel good about myself if I win, stuff like that. So race day comes and we're ahead and we come around the corner. And I decided to speed up.
The pack was out.
I broke the pack. So he speeds up. And then now we're racing to the finish line. Of course, I lose, right? You lose a friend. You lose the medal. And it's like, man, you know, this desire to compete is like conflicting. But it's also what helps you become what you become. Yeah. So now it's my fourth year and a start of camp. And it's coming down to he and I. It's like I'm in the exact same situation I was 25 years earlier. And so we make a pack as an adults, right? And it's like, you know, well, let's just do this right. You know, we'll share the reps and however it unfolds. And we did do it right. And we had a great, you know, training camp, and the fear or the worry of making it was like, you know, I'm gonna do this the right way this time, regardless. This is who I want to be. And I ended up making it. He ended up signing with Tennessee. And so the year goes on. And now we go up to Tennessee to play Tennessee. And I'm running down on punt. And the returner goes left, and I'm getting blocked from the right. My knee plants, and, you know, everything's gone. Get carted off the field. But after the game, I'm on the bus, and the first person on the bus is Scott McGarahan.
Oh, wow.
Right? So it was a tough year. You know, everything ended. But that's what I remember most, of redeeming something that happened so long ago and that unfolding, and kind of the bookend when I had got hurt, like the relationship was still intact, you know, regardless of a medal at stake versus $1 million, you know, you know, in terms of that. So, but that was hard, you know. It was one of those laying on the field, and the first person that came up on the field was Junior Seau, because it was a transition from, you know, punt team to defense. So he kind of shook his head and said, I'm sorry. And I looked at my knee and was like, you kind of have some tears. It's like, this feels like this might be it. Like, wow. I felt, you know, I didn't stop. I rehabbed and tried to come back, but it was that feeling of like, you know, is this really over? Been doing it forever, you know, and that sadness came. But
I bet all that reflection, even the idea that you're thinking back to that fifth grade race, when you're competing for a job in the NFL, as you said, 20-something years later. That's wild that you, and you, like, did you actually, is that a reflection that you're having now as, I mean, obviously you were an adult then, but you become a different kind of adult when you're done and you have a family and everything else. Is that reflection that you realize now, or in that moment were you thinking about that fifth grade
race? I was thinking about it because I think the character of how you handle everything, you know, determines your success. So I had done things the right way since the time I was a rookie year. And there was, it was a, just an opportunity to, like, this is a hard one, you know, like there's a lot at stake. But that came, that flashed up, you know, forward and was like, here's who I am. And if it's not enough, then it's not enough. And that's okay. I can live with that. But I'm gonna do it different because I want to be a different person, you know. And the only way to, I think, sustain success is what's inside. So the adversity was a great opportunity, you know. Even though, you know, what, 8 weeks later, I blew up my knee and that was it. Yeah. But, you know, it's okay. One's not attached to the other.
No,
you know?
No, they're not. Adversity is opportunity is something we hear around here a lot now with the current head coach, who also grew up kind of close to where you're from. But we'll get to that. So. Do you and Scott stay in touch to this day?
Yeah, we stay in touch here and there. He's off in Texas, and you know, everyone has their own lives. But especially 4 or 5 years after, I'd go to Texas and spend time with him, and you know, things like that. But
so you were able to preserve that.
Yeah,
that's really cool.
That is cool, man.
Speaking of, you know, having your own lives, and again, I'm going off script here a little bit, but I have to bring it up. So when Trent and I were talking yesterday, I just wanted to touch base with, or actually he reached out to me. He's like, are we doing this thing tomorrow or whatever? So, oh, I'm sorry, Trent, I'm, you know, JT's got me working. But so I called him and I'm hearing all this stuff in the background, Juice, and you're at your son's high school football. So he's a freshman now?
Yeah.
So he's at his son's high school football game, and like this game's starting. Like I hear the PA announcer and I'm hearing all this stuff. And so Trent, you know, and we're hearing now, Trent's a soft-spoken guy, and he's talking. He's like, okay, that sounds good, and okay, that time, whatever. And then all of a sudden you hear someone, like the whole crowd screams, a touchdown, and he goes, oh, my son just caught a 40-yard touchdown pass. He said, just like that, like there was no emotion. I was like, wow, that's like kind of expected in a Gamble household, huh? So tell us, what's that like? Because I know you did some coaching at the high school level and everything else. What's that like now, having to everything that you did to get there, and then paying it forward, coaching, and now going as a fan and cheering your son on in the same way that your parents cheered you on?
It's been pretty cool because I, you know, for a while he didn't want to play football, and that was fine. Like, you don't have to go down that road, you know, with 9 surgeries and shoulder replacements and whatever. If you want to do it, then, like, you better be the hammer versus the nail. Like, this is a sport, like, you just can't go, let me try this out and see how it goes.
Right.
Like, you better be ready. So he didn't really want to start playing until his seventh grade year. So I started working with him on offense, defense, just going through everything. And last year was his first year in pads, and then came up to Boca, and he's doing really well. You know, I started lifting with him for a long time. So I cook all the meals. I'm the medic at home.
Oh, he's on the check. Gamble routine
now. So I'm in behind the scenes, like I'll film and send notes, and we'll watch film, and I'll take you to the field. But once the game starts, I'm in the stands, and it's good. There's a lot that goes into it.
It must have paid off, though. Juice, the game hasn't been. I mean, it was the first drive. Was it the opening drive?
Yeah, he got a couple touchdowns. Should have had 3.
Oh, you know, got
to the 1-inch line.
You didn't
smell
it. Uncle Homer said you didn't smell the goal line.
It was one of those. Like, it was one of those games. You know,
I love it. That's so good.
Does he have your speed?
Yeah, so he's upset because he has my speed, but he also has my height. So he's only like 5'7", and he's like distraught, like that he's not gonna, you know, be like 6 foot. He's like, you know, because I'm, you know, my dad was like 6'4", and my grandfather on my mom's side like 6'3". So there's only a few shorter people on our whole both sides, and it happens to be me, my mom, my grandmother, and my son. So he's not happy.
Only one of them made it to the
National
Football League.
That's right. He's got speed. Speed. Look, Tyreek's not a tall guy. Speed, 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 man.
So he's a good little player, you know. He's going to develop. So
he's got a lot of ball left in him to play to figure it out. Very cool. Well, we're going to get you out of here soon, so you know, I know your folks are here and you want to have a good time, but we have to put you through the fish tank 2-minute drill. You're a fast guy, the 4.3 speed. You can handle a fast-moving segment here. I love it, Juice. I love looking in their eyes when I say 2-minute drill.
You got to hold my breath? And they're like, we're going free diving, or what are we doing?
No. I think you'll be okay. We're going to throw – Mike's got 2 minutes on the clock there. We're going to put we're going to just throw some questions at you. You answer them as you may. We'll have a little fun with this segment, and then we'll get you out of here. Sound good?
Ready?
I'm ready.
Got it.
Ready to go. You attended Ponderosa High School in Parker, Colorado, which is just 27 minutes away from Smoky Hill High in Aurora, Colorado. Do you know what current Miami Dolphin is a Smoky Hill grad?
I do not.
I thought maybe I blew it.
You tried to blow it. Coach
it's
Mike
Miami
McDaniel.
Dolphin head coach Mike McDaniel.
Coach Mike McDaniel. Yeah.
And I'm slow, aren't I? You set me up. You gave me a softball.
I tried to help out a little bit. Oh, that's too funny. All right. So more Smoky Dolphins Hill. And Trent Gamble history. Is that crazy? He got excited when you said Smoky Hill. Did you guys ever face each other?
No, we were in separate leagues, but there was I know a few people that have gone there. So I was like, okay, what am I missing?
Well, you got to get to know more. Yeah, absolutely. So, all right, more Dolphins and Trent Gamble history. You are one of only two Dolphins ever in the history of this franchise out of the University of Wyoming. Do you know who the other one is?
Jim Kick.
Boom, there
that was
it
a great
is.
One.
All right,
yeah,
good.
That was a great
you
one.
Do that one.
Yep. All right. What is the biggest gamble Trent Gamble has ever taken?
Football? Life?
Whatever.
Oh, I thought that was the answer.
Football and life. That could be gambles. Yeah. Football is a gamble for some, right?
So I know this is a 2-minute drill. So
that's
the,
okay.
The very first
we'll call timeout. We'll get
the very first preseason game against Pittsburgh. After that one play, I ended up was blocking someone. Ended up tearing my shoulder.
In the first preseason game.
Yeah, I went to the trainer the next day. I said, I think something's wrong, and he's like, well, let's just wait till after the season to get an MRI, right?
After the season.
Well, I'm a free agent. I'm not going to make the team, right? So that was the decision. Is like, do I get surgery or do I take put a brace on and take a shot and keep going? So I think that was probably the biggest decision of like, because if I go get surgery, my shoulder may be okay, but like as a free agent, you got one shot.
Gone.
So I decided to, go move forward and had a great year and had, had a career. But that was the gamble. That was, one way or the
gamble's
other.
Gamble's gamble.
Gamble paid off. Yeah,
I love it. I love it. All right, last question. We spoke a lot about your speed throughout this interview, okay? 4.3 speed. Everybody likes hearing that. If all the defensive backs that you ever played with, if you guys all lined up in your prime and there was a race, all the guys, we named them all, who would come in first?
Well, me.
Right.
That's what I like to hear. That's the 2-minute drill right there. Well, me, of course. It's like he thought about the game.
Like,
he knew he would win the race.
Absolutely.
I was thinking about those DBs when I saw the question. I was like, man, he's definitely faster than all those guys.
Yeah. They all had different strengths.
They did.
Now, we can punch and kick and hit on the right run, right?
Yeah. Go for it.
Whatever
it takes to get to the end there. So you still like you if it's no holds barred?
No. No, my son wants to race, and it's like my running and everything days are over.
Yeah.
I've got about 10 seconds to wrestle you if you want it, and that's about as much as I'm going to do.
Don't wrestle him the night before a game, though, okay? Right? Just don't do that. That wasn't a wise decision.
You got to be tough.
Yeah, well, you have to be tough, but you also have to be available.
That's right.
Right? So make save that for like Tuesday or
that's
Wednesday.
That's right.
Oh, that's good stuff. Trent, this was awesome, man. That's I know fun. You're spending good the stuff. Day, your family's in town and everything, but appreciate you hanging out with us for a little bit, and it was really cool to catch up.
Thanks for asking. I'm glad to be here. Good to reminisce.
Yeah, no doubt. Thanks for diving in, Trent.
Thanks, Eric.
You're now diving into the fish tank.
Just like Drew said, thanks for diving into the fish tank presented by iHeartRadio. Be sure to follow us on whatever streaming platform you're using, and don't be afraid to rate the show or leave us a comment. We love your feedback. And remember, you can find us as well as Drive Time with Travis Wingfield and all of our international partners on MiamiDolphins.com.